Hi, I'm Matthew, and I'm going to be talking more about some of these broad phoneme class performance monitoring techniques and sort of why they work and when they work. Sorry for the red background, but I wanted to show you Emmanuel Dupuy's example that he showed us when he was here a few weeks ago. This is a good posterior gram. This is a case that should be giving us a good phoneme error rate. And unfortunately, it's actually only giving us a 40% error rate. And so kind of why is that happening? Well, there is one little insertion or mistake with an L. I guess the W is what should have happened. And there is no J sound, so we got a J sound, and it wanted a SH sound. And with one other insertion, that gave us 40%, which is a little striking because, honestly, the oasis was a mirage, which is what the posterior gram predicted, doesn't seem that bad compared to the oasis was a mirage. So how can we fix that? Well, so Tetsuji talked about that. You can use these broad phoneme classes, and the idea is that if confusions happen within a class, we don't really care. An M versus an N mistake isn't such a big thing as vowel versus consonant. So then we could use this as a way of picking streams. So you would pick the stream that has the fewest between class confusions. And another thing we've been noticing that everyone has talked about is this narrowband noise case really seems to break a lot of our metrics. And this might be something that can improve it, and sort of I'll explain why it might. So these are the phone groupings that we've been using. So vowels, liquids, glides, nasals, plosive, fricatives, and silence. And before I get to this, I'll explain. I worked on entropy as the main metric to compare against. Entropy is just simple, and it was giving relatively similar performance, but it was also very degraded in band 4, so it was interesting to look at. So this is on the x-axis, the different noises that we compared our metrics on, and the Pearson correlation coefficient on the y-axis. So the correlation of our metric with the phoneme error rate. And the blue bars that you see are the normal entropy measures, and the yellow and reds are the merged entropies. And you'll notice that, for the most part, the blue entropies outperform the merged entropies, except on the narrowband cases, where actually the merged entropy metric, and this is merged phoneme classes, really does much better. And so the question is why? So I picked out a few posterior grams here to illustrate the point. So these are all the same utterance. On the bottom, you see the posterior gram of the best stream on clean data. So that is basically what it should look like. On the top left, you see the posterior gram of the stream that was picked by the merged entropies. And on the top right, you see the posterior gram of the stream that was picked by the normal entropy metric. And I did the merged class to be able to compare across them. And what you see is that the stream that the merged entropy metric picks does not have nearly as many of the confusions, especially with silence, so out of class confusions, that the entropy metric picked. So why would this be happening? You could have, for instance, an M and an N, which would be fluctuating back and forth. The normal entropy metric will say, oh, this is bad, I'm seeing M and N, whereas in the merge entropy, it'll say, oh, that's all the same class, it's not a big deal. What happens, though, is that when you get some other things that happen, such as silence coming up, the entropy is more confident on those, and you have these out-of-class confusions, which it weights equally as the MN confusion. And so what it seems to be happening is, especially in the narrowband noise cases, silence is taking the weights away from other posteriors, because when you don't know what something is, you'll classify it as silence for the most part. There also seem to be some duration issues, or the switching, that the merged phone classes seem to disregard so much, because if that switching happens within a class, it's not a problem anymore. So this also picks up a little bit on the duration models that people have been looking at. So just to make sure that I wasn't making anything up with weights being distributed from one to another, I kind of tested that hypothesis out. So these are three noise conditions on the x-axis. This is the car noise condition, which all our metrics have been working great on. Then the xHaul broadband, which our metrics have not been doing so well on, and the band 4 noise. And the commonality that the two noise conditions that our metrics don't work on is that all of the weights have moved over to silence. And even worse, in the narrowband case, since the narrowband noise lives sort of in the Formant 2 frequency band, a lot of those vowel weights are actually what are getting moved out. So the confusions are happening from the vowel class and possibly into the silence class. So what are some conclusions we have from this? There are gains from using broad phone classes in narrowband noise. And just to give you some numbers, when you use the normal entropy metric, it's actually choosing combinations that have the corrupted band in them about a quarter of the time. When you use the merged entropy metric, it's only choosing the corrupted stream 1% of the time. And if you look at what the Oracle performance or what Oracle says we should do, it's much more similar to the merge entropy metric. Now for a second here, I'm just gonna, this is a little bit of a tangent. I was trying to find something that maybe would be good across all noise classes, and I tried a lot of stuff, none of which worked nearly as well as some other things that people have already talked about. But the main point to illustrate here was that the metric you choose really does differently in different noise conditions. So you don't necessarily want something that's just really well correlated. You want something that is well correlated across all conditions. And so that's something really important to look at, the a versatility rather than just a good correlation. And so the other Matthew, Maciejewski, who unfortunately had to leave, was sort of realizing the same thing. He said, the Oracle is doing something very different from what our metrics are doing. So this is a histogram plot here. On the x-axis is the stream number that was picked using different metrics, the blue being an entropy metric, and red Oracle. And you'll notice this little bumpy behavior in Oracle. It really does not like stream 1. So every time the lowest frequency band is included, it doesn't like it, which is why it alternates on liking them and not liking them. So he was trying to find something that would emulate sort of Oracle's behavior. And before I start talking about this plot, what he noticed is if you look at these five frequency bands and you apply a frequency, one of our performance metrics to the five bands, there's sort of a natural clustering that takes place. And if you always are able to pick the best cluster, the best one or two or three, it depends how the clusters look, you're basically emulating what Oracle does. And so he was trying to find a way of clustering things that would always do what Oracle does. So he tried fixing it with one cluster, two clusters, three clusters, four clusters, and then trying to find the optimal number of clusters. And so this graph is across noise conditions. Anything above zero is performance worse compared to using our metric. Anything below zero is better. So this looks discouraging. However, if you look at the red bar on the right, that is using his finding the optimal number of clusters. And what's really interesting about it is very stable across all noise conditions. It will do the same thing across every type of noise for the most part, which is good because we have had very few metrics that actually do the same thing other than m-delta across noise. So the takeaways from this are basically that not all performance monitors work equally well on all conditions. We might have another goal, which would be to find a performance monitor that works well across all conditions and not just works really well. Broad phoneme classes seem to incorporate this idea a little bit, and it might even be emulating what the Oracle does. And we could even try to learn sort of what the Oracle behavior is and try to recreate that in fusing our streams or in measuring our streams. Thank you very much. Anjali will speak now.
Performance monitoring metrics that we worked on. Let me start off with looking at the data that we have to work with in the first place. What you see here are two posteriograms, which I'm sure you've seen enough of them by now to know what they are. This is just to show a distinction between what a clean versus noisy posteriogram looks like. The clean one corresponds to an error rate of 3%, and the noisy one corresponds to an error rate of 66%. The task at hand basically is, given these, how can we really predict or estimate how good a job a classifier is doing, and of course the long-term objective being separating the good classifiers from the bad classifiers. But before we start, we need to have some metric to, what are we basing this goodness and badness on? And that's something we looked at. The most obvious contender, of course, is phonem error rate. But something else that Professors Hermansky and Stern came up with was looking at a measure of similarity between a given test utterance and some reference utterance. This similarity can be measured in two ways. We looked at the KL distance between these two, as well as the cross correlation between the test and the reference. Now, we're working with Timit, and Timit has hand-annotated transcriptions because of which we actually could get the ground truth reference files. So what we've done here, what you see in the top panel is, we've taken these hand-annotated reference files and created a reference posteriogram. So that's what it should look like ideally, where for every frame, there's only one phoneme that has a probability of one and everything else is a zero. The x-axis here are the number of frames, and the y-axis corresponds to phonemes, and of course the higher the probability, the darker is going to be that particular pixel. So what we want to do is find some kind of similarity measure between these two. But of course it's not always easy to find hand-annotated reference transcriptions for everything. So another metric we tried was that instead of using the ground truth reference, we used matched condition test reference files. So basically if I trained on clean, I'm looking at clean test cases and using that as reference. And we used the same frame error and cross-correlation metrics for them as well. Just for a reference, this is what it looks like. So the bottom panel is a matched test case. So we have a total of five metrics, the word error rate, and the two different distance measures using the top and the bottom panel as our reference. Now that we have our gold standards in place, a number of different metrics were tried, like entropy, MTD, and so on that you guys heard about. Something that I tried was, instead of looking at the entropy over the entire posteriogram, I looked at the entropy over the gradient over time. The reasoning behind this being that if a classifier is not sure of what it's doing, it's going to skip around a lot more in the hypothesis that it's giving out, and it's this variation that I wanted to really latch on to. So in true ASR style, I'm going to show as many bars as I can and spend as little time as I can explaining it, but there really isn't enough time to go into the details. The only takeaway from this is that the x-axis here are the different noise conditions we had, and the y-axis is the correlation coefficient. So of course, higher the correlation, more the metric is telling us about what the classifier is doing. And as you can see, it performs, it was comparable to all the other metrics we saw earlier. It was a pretty high level of correlation. The top panel shows the data with clean training, and the bottom one shows the data with noisy training. Something else I looked at was looking at what errors is the classifier making. And how I did that was using confusion matrices. Each of these is a confusion matrix for one particular condition, like clean, babble noise, etc. Both x and y axis are the phonemes that we have in Timit. So of course, in the ideal case, everything would be on the diagonal and the off-diagonal elements would all be zero, but that's not what's happening, of course. What I want to point out is that in each of this, and especially more so in the noisy cases, notice the strip that's on the rightmost corner, that relates to the number of deletions. So these are the cases where the reference file says that there is something there, but the hypothesis has skipped it out for some reason. And when you look at these errors at the frame level, they correspond to a lot of silence being inserted into your hypothesis. This is very similar to what Matt just pointed out, where the errors are moving to the classifier saying that everything is silence. And so it might be possible to tap this as a metric, which is what I did. So basically I looked at the number of segments per utterance as a metric and used the correlations for that. How I did that is, this is just zooming into one posteriogram. What I've done is for every frame, I've picked the phoneme that has the highest posterior probability, and that's the sequence you see at the bottom. And then once I have the sequence, I can just pick out how many segments there are in that particular utterance. This, of course, is normalized by the duration of the utterance itself in frames. And this was the performance that we saw. It did not do as well as the other metrics. in the broadband noise cases, but the places where it did perform well were the two special cases that several people before me have talked about, where we inserted noise in specific bands, which are the last two sets of bars. So in conclusion, it's useful to look at not only the errors, but also metrics like cross correlations or frame error, because it tells us not only whether something is right or wrong, but how right or how wrong. And metrics that look at the temporal trajectories or variations over time also seem to do a very good job of telling us which classifier is outperforming something else. Thank you.
So to restate the task that we are problem that we are trying to solve over here, it's about having an ensemble of classifiers which we train and trying to pick out the best when we have a new test instance. And the critical difference over here is that we are trying to do it in a dynamic fashion. So that is, for each new test instance that you get, you want to have a new selection from the ensemble that you trained for. And the way we do it is by trying to predict the error of each classifier in the ensemble and choosing which have the least error, or trying to fuse them or do a variety of things, like training the classifiers in the ensemble based on the predicted error. So if your classifiers are discriminative classifiers, there are two ways to achieve this. And one of them is to use error prediction models. So basically, over here, you are training a model which is trying to predict whether your classifier is going to perform, give out an error or not. And this is a binary classification problem, which is fairly simple than the actual classification problem. So you expect better performance. The other thing is trying to predict the performance, trying to estimate the performance of the classifier in the neighborhood of the current test instance by seeing how it performed on the training instances which were in the neighborhood. So these are the two popular things that usually are used. But the critical problem over here is that we are assuming that our train and test conditions are very similar, and which we know is not the actual thing that happens in our case. So now when we don't have a test condition which is similar to our train condition, how do you actually estimate the error? And Emmanuel Dupo came with this classification of all the metrics that you would use, and these can be classified according to into three prominent groups. These are metrics which use familiarity, that is, they see how the classifier behaves on training data, and they see how it behaves on test data, and if there is any deviation from this behavior, they would claim that the classifier is going to produce an error. And you would see one such metric which is going to be introduced by Lukash. The other way is try to see the output that the classifier is generating and figure out if this is going, it conforms to all the details that the actual true output would have, but the classifier is not necessarily trained to achieve. And the final group is the one based on stability. So you see how stable the decision of the classifier is in the neighborhood of the current test instance. So you modify the test instance slightly and you see if the decision changes a lot. And if this happens, you claim that the classifier is not stable and you would not use its decision. So I basically worked on two types of metrics, one of which falls into the group of conformity and the other one which falls into the group of stability. So for conformity, I basically wanted to look at how I needed a task that the classifier was not trained for but was critical for proper classification. So we are over here dealing with classifiers which are acoustic models, and the acoustic models, given a segment of signal, acoustic signal, they try to predict what is the posterior of various sounds occurring. But what they are not trained for, at least in the current set of classifiers, is maintaining the posterior trajectory across time frames. So we are going to grade the classifiers in how well they maintain this posterior trajectory and see if this can be a viable cue. So now that we know what we have to design for, let's list out the requirements. So one thing we need from our metric is that it should produce reliable estimates using small amount of data. The second thing is you want this to have as less computational load as possible. And the third thing is you should be able to use this metric not just to select the best or to grade the best, but also to use it as an unsupervised cost metric. So since we decided we are going to use temporal trajectory models, we have two decisions over here. So what kind of models would you use and what kind of distances will we use? So I could either go for really simple models or complex models, and I could measure the distance either in the model space or actually measure the likelihood of the test instance given the model. So each of these has various issues, and we choose the fourth one. The fourth one because simple models, a lot of noise sources can also produce behavior which is very similar to speech, and they can generate good likelihoods. But so I need complex models. But within complex models, I could have actually measured the distance in the model space. But I would not do that because in order to adapt the model for the current test instance, there would be data sparsity problems. So the temporal trajectory models that we are talking about, we could actually build a separate temporal trajectory model and evaluate the likelihood of the current trajectory on that. But we are anyway using a HMM-DNN hybrid decoder, which does something very similar. So in order to reduce the computational load, rather than building a separate model, I would just reuse the same model. So what exactly are we trying to do over here? We have a neural network which is trying to estimate the posterior probabilities of various sounds given a frame. And we have a HMM which is telling it us what is the probability of transitions across states. So for a given time, you'd have both these kinds of probabilities. And within this trellis, you'd figure out the best path. And that would give you some score. And so, for example, over here you have one really simple posteriogram which has time and probability, and the red zones denote the best path. So within this best, once this best path is derived, I could actually take the mean posterior along the best path. I could see how the best path is confused with the n other best paths, which is the phoneme confidence. Or I could measure what is, so these are the segments that are hypothesized by the classifier. So I could actually see what is the probability of generating these segments in the actual training data. So for the current set of experiments, we use a slightly more complex model, which ensures that no noise, a non-speech source can be confused for speech. And you can see, so the metric that was proposed in this previously is the green one over here, and the blue metric shown over here is the M delta, which has been talked about in the previous presentations. So you can see that without any additional computational load, just reusing the decode path that was already being generated, we can get something which is as good as the best metric. So this is what we do for clean training data. And one of our biggest problems was, as soon as we start getting noisy training data, is this behavior going to change in any fashion? But to our surprise, our methods actually perform quite well in noisy training data compared to clean. And this other thing that we wanted was a reliable estimate in a shorter duration of time. So that's what we see over here. So on the x-axis, you have segments of various durations. And on the y-axis, you see the correlation when you use this particular amount of data to measure the correlation. And you can see that this stabilizes pretty fast. And within something like 2 seconds, you can reach around 0.6 correlation. So I'm basically summarizing everything over here. So the other thing is classifier stability, and in order to measure classifier stability, we wanted to know what was the variability of the classifier in the neighborhood, and for that we have been trying to use a neural network Jacobians, but haven't been successful at that till now.
Hi everybody, my name is Harish. I'm from Johns Hopkins University. Today I'm going to present to you about a neural network based performance monitor technique that we developed during the workshop. Now I'll give some motivation. So the general observation is when you have a test data which is similar to the training data on which the classifier was trained on, it performs fairly well. But when the test data is like really different from the training data, the performance can degrade significantly. The similarity of the test data with the training data is correlated with the with the classifier's performance on the test data. So can we use this similarity, or can we predict, can we measure the similarity and use it to predict the performance of the classifier, is the question that we are, that I am trying to address. So the, I have also listed possible applications for this task. So like I'm going to propose a neural network based similarity measuring technique. So this figure shows a standard like feed forward neural network which takes an input X, passes it through a series of nonlinear affine transforms and produces an output Y. So the most standard way of using neural network is the classification task, and in the classification task the output Y represents the posterior probability of X belonging to a particular class. And in the classification setting, the neural network is trying to minimize the cross entropy between one hot targets and the output Y. So we wanted to we wanted to use the neural network in the regression task. So what we do is train the neural network to reduce the instead of cross entropy, to we train the neural network to reduce the mean square error between the output Y and target X. So what happens is like this makes the neural network to learn an approximate identity mapping between approximate identity, and so one solution to the approximate identity mapping is nothing but an identity mapping. So in order to avoid the neural network to learn an identity mapping, we constrain the neural network by introducing a bottleneck hidden layer. So the property of the bottleneck hidden layer should be the dimensionality of the that layer should be less than the input layer. So this avoids the trivial solution. So once we have a network like this trained with this mean square error, the hypothesis how does it behave on the seen conditions versus how does it behave on the unseen conditions. So the main hypothesis is, if input X is sampled from the same distribution as of training data, it has a low mean square error. And if input X is sampled from some other distribution from the training data, we can expect a higher mean square error. So in order to like, so this is a hypothesis, and this plot shows how the behavior of the neural network, I'm calling autoencoder here. Why I'm calling neural network an autoencoder here is it was trying to learn the identity mapping. So I forgot to mention that. So this plot shows the, on the x-axis of this plot is the mean square error of the autoencoder, and on the y-axis is the histogram. So the blue plot here shows the distribution of the mean square error on the training data, on the clean training data, and the green one shows the distribution on the clean test data. As you can see, when the acoustic conditions match between the training and test, we get mean square error, which is like mean square error of the test data, which is really similar to the mean square error of training data. When you introduce noise to the test data and compute the mean square error, we can see that mean square error increases substantially. So now we are going to use this property of the autoencoder to for the task of performance monitoring. So in order to achieve this, what we did is we took a clean posteriogram and trained a neural network to learn the identity mapping of the posterior trajectory. And then use the mean square error between the input posterior trajectory and the output posterior trajectory, and use that to predict the performance. So this is the scatter plot between the phoneme error rate and the mean square error computed across several noise conditions. The x-axis shows the mean square error, and the y-axis shows the phoneme error rate. this gives reasonable correlation of 0.6. And now we tested, or we used the performance monitor on the multi-stream architecture that was shown before. And here are the bar charts. So this is the phonem error rate. So the lower is better. This is the neural network or autoencoder based performance monitor, and this is the one without performance monitor, and this is the M delta performance monitor, which are shown to be one of the best performing one. And this is tested on three noise conditions. This is the full band corruption. This is the broadband noise. These are the narrow band noises. We can see that the proposed technique works reasonably well. So that's it. Now Lukash and Karel from BUT are going to take over.
And I would like to say a few words about the motivation we had. Why did we start to look inside of the neural networks? So the ASR system nowadays, what they do, if we simplify it a little bit, we have a spectrogram. In this spectrogram, we pick some window, we concatenate several frames, and then this window gets transformed in a way which is suitable as neural network input. Then we have the neural network, which is it's some fixed function with trainable parameters, which finally produces posterior probabilities. So in each point in the time, we see how probable some phoneme was. And what is important, that this neural network also offers us the hidden layer representation of the, which should lie somewhere between the input and the output, which would be some alternative encoding of the same stimuli. And many performance monitoring techniques are based on the phoneme, the posterior probabilities, but we believe that if we look inside of the neural network, we can have yet another picture which could possibly contain some complementary information to the posterior probabilities. And also, I would like to state that it's not, the hidden layers were not studied deeply. So in the community, there is some vague, many people would say that what we can see in the hidden layers is some sort of organized chaos. We have an utterance. This axis is the temporal axis. We have 1024 neurons in the hidden layer, and here we see the signals which get propagated. This picture corresponds to the input of the nonlinearity, whereas the other picture corresponds to the output after the sigmoid. So before the sigmoid, we see that the dynamic range is much higher, and then because of the sigmoid, it gets squashed out. That's the margin areas further than 5 from the zero get rounded to the 0-1 values. So then this is a more precise picture that in the first picture we didn't see some details. Here we plot 7 neurons. It's the same hidden layer, it's same utterance. The only difference is that in the top case the data was clean utterance, and in the second case there was heavy noise was added to the original waveform, and this represents a heavily mismatched condition that the neural network was trained on clean data and slightly noise data, whereas the second one is much worse condition. And here we can see that there are some qualitative differences between the signals. They have some common features, like for example this black line has this hill in here. We can see more or less the same pattern in the other picture, but for example in this area we see that the dynamic range is much lower, and so we see that the trajectories are similar to some extent but different in the same time. So maybe if we can characterize correctly the differences between the two, we can use this information to create a performance predictor. And this performance predictor can be used in different ways, that it can either simply detect the data mismatch, which can be used in applications to reject some and utterance where the recognizer doesn't know what should be the answer, so it's fair enough to ask for to re-speak. Or it could be used as a for data preselection in the semi-supervised training, or if, or maybe we can like try to fix the recognizer, that if we see that the distribution between the clean and noisy data is very different, we can try to map the noisy one back to the range of the clean and see what it does. We tried this, we have some like small success, but it's not clear whether it's not clear that it's too early. So I would like to pass the word to Lukáš, which will describe the techniques.
Okay, so Karel gave you the introduction into what we are trying to do, looking inside of the neural network into the signal that flows through the through the hidden layers in the neural network, and how that could be used. And now I will tell a few words about the actual performance measure, or let me call it for simplicity, confidence measure, how we try to derive some confidence measure from what we see in the hidden layers. So in this work we try to derive only sentence level confidence measure, meaning getting single number per sentence, and the number should correlate well with phone array. This is what we were looking into. So if we get one utterance, and if we get some utterance that would be represented by such signal or such signal at the input to the nonlinearity, at the output to the nonlinearity, we would like to somehow summarize some, get some statistic describing this signal. So one way of doing that was basically simply take this signal and take mean of it and get single vector representing the utterance. If you look at the output of the nonlinearity, we took mean of that, which gives us vector with values between 0 and 1, and then we took logit of it just to transform it into some Gaussian-like distribution. And now we get single vector, I'm going to call it mean vector per each utterance, and we can look at these vectors, we can see whether the distribution of these vectors looks like what we would expect from the training data. So we can look at distribution of these vectors on training data and see whether the test utterance fits this distribution well or not. Or alternatively, we can describe these utterances by training models. This was supposed to be Gaussian distribution, a little different on Mac. So training, getting maximum likelihood estimate of Gaussian distribution, in our case, Gaussian distribution with diagonal covariance model, and the distribution will represent the utterance. Or if we look at the output of the nonlinearity, we would train beta distribution for each output, because the output is between 0 and 1, so beta distribution with correctly model such distribution. And the final distribution is basically product of the data distributions of all these values. And what we can do with this distribution, we can estimate such distribution for each utterance, and we can estimate such distribution for our training data, let's call it clean data, and we can compare this distribution for using KL divergence or alternatively, we can look at some property of this distribution. So this basically summarizes what I just said. Let's extract even the mean vectors and model the distribution of the mean vectors, and look if we get some test utterance. Let's calculate likelihood how well the test utterance fits the distribution of the clean data. And
So this would be one score that we use. Alternative score is that we obtain the distributions that describe each utterance, and we calculate KEL divergence between distribution corresponding to the utterance and the general distribution corresponding to the training data. Another score that we try to use is we look at the entropy of the distribution, how much uncertainty of the utterance-specific distribution is there. Then we don't need to actually even train anything on the training data. So. Our experimental setup is similar to what you have seen for the other people. We train on timid, clean, and slightly noisy data, and we test on different kind of noises from timid data corrupted by different kind of noises. Here we can see one of the techniques. So this is the score one, where we look at the log likelihood score, how well the mean vector fits the distribution of training data, and you see basically different results for different the different rows here corresponds to different hidden layers in the neural network or in the output layer, and these are the distributions of the vectors from the before the nonlinearity in the neural network. These are the distributions after the nonlinearity in the neural network, and you can see that at the beginning of in the first hidden layers and at the very end you can't see much. This actually looks like that the most informative layer somewhere in the middle. Well, I should tell you what these plots are, but you have seen that before. So this is basically correlation between the score and the actual word error rate, and you see that higher score basically corresponds to better likelihood, better match, and the green dots here correspond to clean data, the black dots here correspond to the highest SNR level. So you see that it's somehow higher SNR corresponds to higher word error rate, and you see some interesting correlation here. So this would be just for single measure. Then we tried basically all these different measures. So if you look at these pictures, these would be the different measures from the linear layers, from the nonlinear layers, and looking at the likelihoods of the mean vectors or KEL divergence between distributions, entropy of the distributions themselves. So the different scores, and you can see actually the correlation numbers next to these different scores. The different scores have all pretty much good, nice correlation with the actual performance. Sometimes you see that there is positive, negative correlation. Basically, higher likelihood means better match with the training data, or for the KEL divergence, small KEL divergence means better match with the training data, but in general they have pretty good correlation. This score, looking just at the entropy of the Gaussian distribution and in the linear layer, gave us the best number. Here we compare it with the baseline, which is the average cross entropy that you have heard about before, and you can actually see that it also performs pretty well, but you can actually see that there can be some problems. So for example, if you compare these black dots here, there are all the data are zero SNR and different colors are different type of noises, so you can see that different noises are actually have different difficulty, would have different word error rate even though that they are all zero SNR. And you can see that, for example, this noise generally has higher word error rate than these red dots, but on the axis of the entropy measure, they would get the scores other way around. So these would be obtain higher scores, saying they should be more difficult, but they should be right. So this the negative correlation: lower scores but higher SNRs, higher scores but higher word error rates, higher scores but lower word error rates. So you can see that the entropy, just looking at the uncertainty at the output, that always doesn't tell you everything. And finally, we just try to fuse these three scores, including the entropy, and after fusing it, we got the correlation coefficient 0.9, which was basically the best number that we got in this case. So that's it.